11 o'clock hour here on a Thursday. Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. Here in about 10 minutes, we'll get to an update in Chicago on the future of their baseball team, one of their baseball teams. And could this be the opportunity for Nashville to finally get a team? We'll get into that in just a little bit. I'll just tell you, Nashville, that'd be a fun road trip to watch the Royals play the Nashville Aces.
You're a big Nashville guy.
I don't know
guy.
What they would be. I am a big Nashville.
Don't they have a double or triple A team?
I think the Sounds. Right?
The Sounds. That is correct. Yes.
Let me just tell me.
They already have an ownership group ready to go. So anyway, we'll talk about that. There's some rumblings out of Chicago around the White Sox and their ownership group, and of course that brings the possibility of maybe moving the team more so than Minnesota, where the Twins are reportedly going to be sold, but nobody's worried about the Twins leaving Minneapolis. So we'll get there in a bit. You guys can keep interacting with us. We appreciate it. 913-586-7965. That's the Jays Southland Tow Service text line. So much discussion around the trade deadline for the Chiefs and the NFL, and we got to November 5th for that. One thing that maybe we didn't consider enough with how the Chiefs approach it versus another team is, not who's all in more and who has historical implications and who has a quarterback on a rookie deal still or an expiring deal, that kind of stuff, which is always part of the equation. But there was a graphic on TV during, I think it was Monday Night Football, and they were going through the youngest offensive lines only in football. And the Chiefs have the youngest offensive line in football. You're probably not surprised about that.
Well, they are starting a third-year player at left tackle and a...
Correct.
Yeah.
Other than Joe Tooney, they're all very young. So that was like, okay, yeah, that kind of makes sense. You look at the entire team, though. The Chiefs are toward the top of the league in youth on the roster, period, which has made this entire dynasty run even more impressive from Brett Veach. So the youngest team in football, just if you're wondering, is the Packers. Then the Rams, Broncos, Bucks, Chargers, Eagles, Raiders, then the Chiefs.
Number of teams who have turned over their roster in order to try to get good here recently.
Mm-hmm. The oldest team, the Buffalo Bills.
By the way, Cincinnati is also in the top
number three
in that category.
Carolina, too. Yikes. Anyway.
But that's expected. That's supposed to be what competitive teams are doing. The Carolina one, that's embarrassing. And maybe Adam Thielen himself is driving that number up. But look at it. You expect it. Miami was trying to make a run. They're the sixth oldest. Cincinnati been trying to make runs. Third oldest. Buffalo. San Francisco, the seventh oldest. The Steelers, the ninth. Like, teams you would have expected to be around that. If I were the rest of the league, I'd hate this stat. Hate it. It also puts the Chiefs in a precarious situation. We spent a lot of time talking about what this team should do at the trade deadline and the level of aggressiveness they should be. But God, time is on their side. Look at their roster right now. If I just tell you age, you're like, God, are they really that young? Is there a single linebacker on a second contract? Is there a single corner on a second contract? There's one safety, Justin Reed.
Tranquil would be the only one.
Tranquil, okay.
He's the oldest
so
of the bunch. Yeah.
One, Justin Reed, one.
Mm-hmm.
None of the corners. Jalen Watson, Joshua Williams, Trent McDuffie. They don't even have a second deal in this league. They are, by all accounts, one of the single youngest teams on defense across the board. So for as much as I'll tell you, defenses age faster, but they're one of the youngest defenses. So they got a few years left of dominance before they got to like turn some of those players around. It makes it hard for the Chiefs to say, sell your soul. Go all in, because with one of the youngest rosters, your window, and I know your window with Mahomes is always kind of open, but the window of this roster is longer than you think.
Well, that what's great about them winning the last couple Super Bowls is that at that point, even cap-wise, we said, hey, you know, they're up against it, but they're actually going to be in a better spot cap-wise in a year or two. We said that like a year ago. Mm-hmm. And so because of how smart they've been, and it helps when you draft as well as Brett Veach has with the late round picks over the last 2 years and hitting multiple home runs. And then when you did draft a first rounder in McDuffie and Karloftis's case, they both have been effective. We'll see about Worthy. People can point out the second round picks and some of those haven't panned out as much, but the last couple first round picks have. And obviously we know about guys picked round 3 to 6 essentially and the track record that he has over the last couple of years. That's also why they're able to do they're young teams, but also they didn't feel like they had to go out and spend money in free agency on vets in certain areas because they had young guys they were able to develop. And that's the key why this dynasty has continued. You know, everybody got upset many years ago when they spent all that money on Anthony Hitchens. At that point in time where that franchise was, they kind of needed to. They didn't have at that point in time a young up-and-coming linebacker. They did a few years later when they drafted Nick Bolton and Willie Gay, and we all know the history and how they continued to progress. But that's why they're the youngest team, is because they haven't been forced to go out and plug and play a ton of vets. Yeah, they brought in Justin Reed, as you said, off the market. Justin Reed and Tyrann Mathieu at times off the market. But other than that, man, they pick and choose. There's like two spots. But that not at prime positions, though.
No,
you know, not at defensive line, not at corner. Obviously, no. They don't have to worry about a quarterback. Not at, you know, a tackle would be the one time with Juwan Taylor. They haven't done it at wide receiver. Hollywood Brown, I know he hasn't played, but he was on one year deal. Juju a couple years ago, a 1 year deal for about the same amount of money. So they spend money in free agency, but it's usually at more inexpensive positions, or the one time they'll do it is. You know, at guard at the time when they signed Joe Tooney after the Super Bowl, we thought that, oh man, that's a ton of money. And now Joe Tooney's contract is very team friendly.
I guess the Ringer puts out this article at the beginning of the year. And so I guess now I'm asking you in week five, knowing this stat, right, that the Chiefs have one of the single best rosters. And look, this conversation could pretty much just be us gushing about Brett Veach.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean,
that's just reality.
Just straight up, because Karlaftis, McDuff, look how many starters are still on their rookie contract. Watson, Williams, McDuffie, Karlaftis, Worthy, you know, it doesn't matter. Pacheco before, right? If not, Steele, whatever. It's a million different players for them on their rookie deals. What do you think their all-in index is? Like, this is something the Ringer does, and they do it before the season, but I'm asking now in week five. If you're ranking out the teams in the NFL who have to be the most all in, are the Chiefs in the top 10 still because they're going for back-to-back Super Bowl? Because they're going for their third straight Super Bowl title? Are they still below teams like the Bills and Cincinnati, teams that are truly desperate? Cincinnati's probably gotten below the Chiefs now. They're 2-4. How desperate can they be? At some point, they might have to look themselves in the mirror and say, this ain't the year. Next year.
I mean, the Chiefs are still all in. I mean, they're going for a three-peat. Let's look at their offseason. They went and they traded up a few spots in the first round to go get Xavier Worthy to help the wide receiver room. They went out and signed Hollywood Brown. Just because it wasn't a four-year deal for $70 million or whatever it was for Calvin Ridley, doesn't mean that they're not all in. By the way, thank goodness they didn't sign that contract, I guess, in hindsight, although it's the Titans.
Fairness, isn't that just Will Levis? I mean, am I blaming any wide receiver not being successful in Nashville right now when Will Levis is their quarterback?
I mean, some of it is Levis. The other part, though, is Calvin Ridley, as we said the other day, is like, what did you expect when you signed with Tennessee? You wanted the money. Not going to fault you, but like now you're complaining you're not getting the football? Like,
wouldn't Jacksonville offer the money? I mean, that hasn't been good either. But so you're going to a loser either way.
Yeah, I mean, Gabe Davis down in Jacksonville was another guy that was thrown around at times financially. So they've been aggressive. I think there's a lot of fans that want them to go just, you know, give up multiple picks and all that. Amari Cooper, I would have been fine giving up a third round pick for. I said that on Monday or whatever, or Tuesday. But they weren't. And was it because of the draft capital? Was it strictly because of age for Cooper? That's why, I mean, Brett Veach hasn't spoken since then. I would love to know and get an honest answer. I don't know if we'll ever get it. But, like, you know, in a certain setting of, like, all right, were you just not interested in Cooper? Did the Bills just beat you to the punch? Did you not want to give up a third-round pick? Nate Taylor made it sound like they just weren't interested. Okay, that's fine if you weren't.
But why?
Why? Was it the age? Was it the drops? Because he leads the league in drops? I don't know.
I feel like they sign or they trade for Deontay Johnson, that doesn't tell me it doesn't scream to me they're all in any more than they were before.
Yeah.
Because if they were all in as much as, if they were hot on all in, they were the most team, the team that's the most all in out of anybody, they would have traded for Amari Cooper regardless of the age, because even if it's a one-off, we want to get this three-peat and we're going to do what it takes to get that three-peat and put us in the best position to do that. They still might be able to win without having Amari Cooper, but it makes them a little bit cooler, I think, they really think that they're all in, or they want to treat it that way by not going after Amari Cooper.
At least feel like they'd be in the conversation.
Sure. Yeah.
At the top of the index, we agree the New York Jets are off the chart.
Like, I mean,
they're off the chart. Like, they're off the page. Okay. Like, that's where the New York Jets are.
Can't be tracked. Yeah.
They're in a different, you know how like we talk about Patrick Mahomes in his own little tier, and let's just set that aside for a minute and get to the rest of it. That's the Jets in this conversation. They are in a completely separate index for desperation.
We'll get to the trash of the day here in about 6 minutes or so. But there was some news out of Chicago, an issue reported on by the Athletic, which is that their longtime owner of the White Sox, Jerry Reinsdorf, also owns the Bulls, not very well liked. He's open to selling the White Sox.
And thank God, he sucks.
He's 88 years old. He's reportedly in active discussions with a group led by former big leaguer Dave Stewart. He bought the team back in 81 for $20 million. He's the second longest active owner in Major League Baseball, only behind the Steinbrenner family, I believe, in the New York Yankees. And with this, what's interesting about this scenario versus like the Twins reportedly being for sale is that there has always been some speculation that the White Sox could be the team in a city that already has the Cubs, that could they be the team to sell to an ownership group when Reinsdorf might not care? Like, hey, highest bidder. He may not be as loyal to keeping the team in Chicago. And so he might just look for the highest bidder. He doesn't care about keeping the team in his city. Could this be the play for Nashville, who has a group ready to go? They don't have the stadium, but they have an ownership group ready to go. And I mentioned Dave Stewart. Like, could that be the team that ends up in Nashville?
First off, let all of our investments pay off that well. In 40 years, he turns $20 million into $2 billion. $2 billion, that's what the Chicago White Sox are estimated to be worth. Of course this is the play for Nashville. Chicago is the only other market besides New York and LA to have multiple baseball teams. That's it. So it's easy enough to be like, you got one. Enjoy them. Sorry, well, Chicago, we're Nashville, and now we're going to steal it. But the easiest part about this is Jerry Reinsdorf is one of the worst owners in professional sports. He does not care about the team. He is not invested in the team. So Chicago, this is kind of a double-edged sword. Chicago White Sox fans have been begging this man to sell the team for decades. He does not care about their success. He cares about making money in the bottom line, which opens up door number two. The problem is, if you're a Nashville ownership group, why wouldn't you be the highest bidder? Overpay. It will, in turn, in time, be worth the amount you pay for it. And not that long, if we're being honest. And if you're the person who brings a baseball team to Nashville, that place is going to be sold out for years, especially if you invest in it. Now, I don't think you're going to get any carryover. I think it's a brand new fan base situation. I don't know how many Chicago White Sox fans are going to go cheer for the, I don't think it'll be the Nashville White Sox, but whoever their new franchise is named. But yeah, I think this is Nashville's best chance. Other than expansion, this is their best chance.
I'm a little skeptical still because we heard from many years ago that the Angels, Artie
Moreno,
he was reportedly going to sell the team, and he still hasn't, right? Last check. Mm-hmm. So
and he also sucks.
So I'm a little skeptical that Reinsdorf actually sells. In the past, he said he was going to keep the team till he died and leave it up to his heirs to decide what to do. Those are previous comments that he has made. The other part that it was pointed out in the New York Times article is that he's the principal owner, but he only owns 19% of the team.
So he's got to get everybody else on board.
So he needs others involved to get on board. Maybe they are on board. I don't know. I'm just saying, like, that's
he's
what's
practically
unique.
A poor. Only 19%.
Only 19%.
Wow.
Whereas
embarrassing.
The group that they're reportedly having discussions with is a group, Dave Stewart, who is, of course, connections with the Nashville market. And it's like, would you rather be waiting for an expansion if you're Nashville or pay the heavy price of buying the White Sox and then moving them out of the top five, top 10 media market to Nashville, which is like market 27? Is that the most financially, you know, beneficial way to do it? Or do you just wait for an expansion team if you're Nashville?
This is why it stinks to not have a team with local ownership. Because you're like, well, you know, the other 80% has got to be owned by somebody. Yeah, it's probably owned by private equity. And all they care about is brand new stadium. Brand new stadium, new market. You're right. It is a smaller market than Chicago, but Chicago is a shared market, and you are not the bell cow in the market. Are you better off being second fiddle in Chicago to the Cubs or being the number one big dog in Nashville? And the answer is probably big dog in Nashville, especially if it comes with a brand new shiny baseball stadium, which I think they've worked out details on, at least in previous discussions for some of these ownership groups. They've at least got some penciled in plans for how they would do it. This is why you should think every day that when the Royals eventually sold, they sold them to John Sherman. And you better pray that every single person who keeps selling them decides to give them a haircut and sell them to the right person so that they're not going anywhere. Kansas City would be significantly greater at risk than a city like Chicago of losing a team if ownership landed in the wrong hands.
That goes back to the stadium conversation here in town. And people can be skeptical all they want, but one thing that John Sherman has been consistent on throughout this entire process, I know there's been plenty of other issues that you should be critical of, but throughout the process of trying to find the future home of the Royals in this city, has been a big reason why he wants to do that is to make sure, you know, it's a 30-40 year lease and that there is stability for the franchise to keep them in this market, to your point.
That there's truth
and I believe
underplayed thing.
I believe him on that. You can be skeptical on anything else, that's fine. Obviously wasn't handled well in the process in April by a lot of parties involved. But the one thing I truly deep down believe, and I think he has reiterated over and over, is a lot of this, other than, of course, the financial benefit of having real estate around a ballpark, is that the best chance of keeping the Royals long-term in Kansas City is to have a stadium and in a lease long-term, right? Makes sense. And his ties to the area have made that a realistic possibility to be able to work out with either Kansas or Missouri over the next years ahead. So, that's always the concern with any team in a market like this size.
Yeah, because we're a mid-sized market and there are bigger ones, or there are newer ones. Sometimes it's the new shiny toy, right? It's not always that it's a bigger market that they're going to, because Vegas is not a bigger market than Kansas City.
But you have so many tourists worldwide.
A lot of money,
man.
And a lot of tourists and a million other things, but it's not a big TV market. And it's like, because of that, like, but there's a lot of moving parts. I would be sick to my stomach if I was a White Sox fan that I've been begging this loser to sell the team for years, and then he ends up selling it to a team that moves it out of the city. I'd be so pissed.
Yeah, like, I never want to see fans that are diehard fans of a team and they grew up and lose their team. Look at what just happened to the Oakland A's. Like, that sucks. That flat out sucks. And it would be one of the worst days in your sports fandom when that happens, if that happens. So I feel for White Sox fans if it happens. On the flip side, being not in Chicago, I must say, having a team one way or the other in Nashville would be fun. Talk about road trips to go see the Royals play in Nashville. Mark that on the calendar, please.
Can you imagine how happy Vinny Pasquantino would be? He spends his offseason in Nashville.
He does.
Man.
Now, look, this is many years away. They have to build a stadium and everything in Nashville. But I hear you. I got you. All right, let's get to the trash.
Trash of the day.
All right, let's go to New York for this one. Has to do with the Jets. No, not Aaron Rodgers, not Devontae Adams, not Robert Saleh getting fired. No, this is separate. You guys, I'm sure, well aware of super fans being in the news.
Well, in this market, more familiar than most.
Uh-huh. Well, Fireman Ed, you've seen him, you've heard
him.
He's been around for
the plastic helmet. Yeah, and he's obviously, maybe it's a metal helmet, actually. I don't know.
Yeah, so he's Jets super fan. His name is Ed. That's his real name. And he was upset. He insists that something's been going on at Jets games here recently. He took to Instagram on Tuesday to allege that his screen time on the video boards at MetLife had been decreasing, and even fellow Jets fans were taking notice. Quote, "I've been getting a lot of emails and texts from fans about the Jet experience in the stadium with the big screens. Last night in particular, although on the Denver game also, the Jets scored a touchdown, and normally it's a tradition when we've always been put on the screen after a Jets touchdown." He goes on and on and on from there. You're basically upset. They're not showing me enough on the video board. Get over yourself, dude. Get over yourself. Are you kidding me?
This is maximum crybaby stuff.
Yes.
What do you think? Do you think you're owed that or something? Do you think you're owed more screen time, Fireman Ed? Like they owe you a chance to be on the video board as much as you can, being phased out of games? No one cares. Wasn't working, Fireman Ed. Was the last time this team was any good? They got to show you forever. Superfans, man, they just...
You have got to be smoking something over there this morning.
I just think that they might be operating with, like, less than a full deck of cards.
Look,
okay, I just, they might be missing a few suits. Because complaining about this is very
what else
sad.
Does he want? He usually
I've been getting
gets
a lot
to,
of emails. He says yeah. fans about the experience not being the same.
He usually gets featured on Monday Night Football anyway, and they show him leading the Jets Jets chant, which I told you that stuff drives me crazy. Just because, like, we know, congrats, you can spell your team name. Good for you, Eagles fans. Also, other colleges around the area, like, good, you can spell your team. That's cool. Good for you. So he gets on TV plenty. So I don't know what he's complaining about, but it's a terrible look for you to be like, show me more. How come you're not making me more popular in the stadium?
I like this said, the Jets did not immediately respond to the post when sought for comment.
And text line's right.
I'm
there was a story when the team was really, really bad, even worse than what they are now. He quit on the Jets. He gave up his fandom. Then he came back.
Oh, wait, what? He quit?
It happened at one point in time, yes.
Oh, well, then no good. No deal.
I don't even think you could be considered a super fan at that point. Like you have the super removed from your
super
title.
Fans, the most they're able to do to criticize their team is put a paper sack over their head. We've established this. One brown paper sack with the eye holes cut out is all you're allowed to do if you're disappointed as a super fan. You still have to be there.
You also aren't the mascot, dude. Like, you aren't the mascot.
What is the mascot? Is it a dog or something? Is it like a dog?
It's like a jet. Like, it's a dude wearing a jetpack. No, I'm just kidding. I don't know what it is.
Way cooler. Like, he's like the Rocketeer.
I don't know. What is
he? He's riding a jetpack? That's badass.
Mascot. I think it's a dog.
It is. The Jets do not have a mascot. Officially. There is a photo of what Drew is saying. There's a
looks like a little. Yeah.
It says that Jets do not officially have a mascot. They're one of four teams without one, along with the Giants, Washington, and the Packers. I don't know. That's just what Google says. But I do see photos of like a little, I don't know, dog or wolf wearing a Jets uniform. I don't know if it's an official mascot, though.
It would be tough for the Packers to have a mascot. What are they going to have? Like a
just
block
a giant,
of cheese?
Just a giant block of cheese, man.
They had one for a while, apparently, in the 80s, named after Benny and the Jets, the Elton John song. But that dated, apparently, and they just decided to get out of the game. Interesting. Well, then he kind of is the mascot. I don't, you know. He represents everything. A sad crybaby with a team that never wins. He's pretty much the living embodiment of what it's like to be a Jets.
Fireman Ed is the guy. If you ask about the Jets, we didn't do this. He is a
wee
guy.
He's definitely a wee guy. He's
a wee guy. That is what it is. That's fine. If you're a fan, that's okay. I just like it. It's just... You're complaining because they're not showing you on the Jumbotron enough. Just like listen to yourself for a second. If you're him, like, don't you get why this just doesn't come off right?
Anyway. You should try robbing banks. Great publicity in that. I've been told. Mm-hmm. Netflix series.
You'll be on TV and stuff plenty.
Documentaries.
That doc has to be coming out.
Like, talking about you.
Do we think that Netflix doc is like after the football season? Like by spring? Do you think we'll have it?
Yeah, I think so.
Not the ESPN one that was. We already knew most of the stuff that was in.
I would still like him to come on this show, though.
I don't think that's happening. That attorney is absolutely getting interviewed, and I mean, we don't have time to play any clips of that. But
I can't wait.
I was so disappointed that he didn't give any sort of a soliloquy after the sentencing. He didn't say anything.
Yeah, I was hoping he would speak on the courthouse steps and did not get that. Someone said, "Hey, if the Chiefs can have a wolf, why can't the Jets have one?" Oh, sure, I agree. They should just have a foam type of mascot wearing like a jetpack or something.
They should have the Dayton Flyers mascot. Should be the Jets mascot.
There you go.
Because he has like the goggles and everything like that too. Yeah, a proper pilot.
Get someone says it's an airplane.
No, everyone says they don't have one.
They don't have an official mascot.
It also wouldn't be an airplane. It'd be a jet. Those are different. It'd be a jet. It wouldn't just be like a 747.
Yeah, we're getting confused with the... We're getting confused
it'd be
like
a fighter jet. They're not going to just choose an Airbus.
It'd be like a Blue Angel or something. Yeah.
All right. That's the trash of the day. Up next, we get to the Chiefs Red Half Hour. Talk a bit more about Patrick Mahomes and one thing that continues to come up with his passing attack. That's next here on Cody and Gold.
Welcome in to the Chiefs Red Half Hour. Every day at 11:30 with Cody and Gold on your new home for Chiefs football. 96.5, The Fan.
We had one of our texters text in. They've memorized the Chiefs Red Half Hour wording. They actually texted in, "Hut, hut, this is the Chiefs Red Half Hour." Every day at 11:30 on Cody and Gold.
On your new home for Chiefs football,
right,
96.5, The Fan, an important tag.
That is very important. Coming up at 1 o'clock today, we'll get you set for fantasy football. How to approach the Chiefs-Niners game, fantasy football-wise, the rest of the slate, including Thursday Night Football this evening. Paul Charchian of GuillotineLeagues.com will join us. A lot of people have been asking for what's your fantasy. I don't know if it's going to come back today. Maybe that's a good while we're in Vegas thing next week. Maybe next Thursday.
Probably a really good place for that, honestly.
Maybe we bring back what's your fantasy for next Thursday when we're in Vegas, which reminds me
fantasy
once again.
Fantasy football or otherwise.
Yeah, it could be any fantasy.
Any kind of fantasy.
Any fantasy questions, advice, anything.
Do we still have the music in the system?
I don't know. We have till next Thursday to figure that out. But I think multiple have asked.
We do.
Drew will have it for us next Thursday. I don't think we should do the really uncomfortable version right away.
Interesting.
The explicit version? Mm. Yeah, well.
Mm. Okay.
I think we have both, though.
Now that we're on FM, you know, it'll be even louder.
I remember now. I remember now what it's saved as.
What's it saved as?
Well, I was searching fantasy.
Porn music or something?
That's what it's
saved as. Porn music.
Yeah, that's literally its title in there.
Yes. Okay.
This is the non-explicit one. You'd know right away because the other one.
There would have been.
We'll play the first 5 seconds of the other one.
You'd know within five seconds that it's the other one.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Does not take long into the song to know.
Next Thursday, we will bring back What's Your Fantasy while we're in Vegas. Hopefully you join us in Vegas once again. Circa Las Vegas will be out there a week from today. Broadcasting live poolside at Stadium Swim, largest sports book in the world. It is going to be a great time. More and more of you have messaged us asking for links to RSVP for the happy hour event we're doing. That's next Friday night at Circa, the Overhang Bar to be specific. But you might as well RSVP if you're going to be out in Vegas and in the area, because not only the Chiefs playing the Raiders that Sunday, but your RSVP, it gets you a free drink. It gets you registered to win tickets to that game and registered to win a day bed poolside. It's gonna be like 85 degrees. We're gonna have a great time. Hope to see you guys out there. One thing I want to pass along though during the break, there was a little bit of news in the NFL, speculation, I guess, based off of who could be available wide receiver wise. We know now that Devontae Adams is a wide receiver with the Jets, that they are going to trade Mike Williams if they can. Diana Rossini reporting that the Chargers, Steelers, and Saints are among a number of teams reaching out to the Jets about wide receiver Mike Williams. She names three. Who are the among a number of, who are the Chiefs among the other number of teams is the question. She mentions Chargers, Steelers, and Saints, but not that it's only the Chargers, Steelers, and Saints. I told you Mike Williams is like my backup plan. My worry though is that the Jets are going to want to trade him before like the weekends or
you think
on Monday.
If the Chiefs were interested, she would have mentioned the Chiefs.
I would think, probably. Unless her sources are, she doesn't, you know.
She's pretty well sourced.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there's just the three teams they're letting about, or maybe the Chiefs are trying to keep their cards close to the vest. Because I'll tell you right now, if you're the Chiefs and you're calling a team about wide receiver, they know you're desperate.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, oh, no, we're not desperate. We're cool with what we got. You know, just let us know if you're interested. They're trying to play it cool. I think there is part of that maybe that's going on there, but I don't know.
What about the other teams
Mike
mentioned?
Anyway.
The Chargers? You mean the team that just let him go after tearing his MCL? I know it's a new regime. Maybe that's the argument. But like, what, the Chargers are going to trade for a guy they let walk? Like, yeah, that's kind of weird.
Maybe Herbert's like, hey, man, give me my guy back. Hmm. Is Quentin Johnston healthy, or is he dealing with an issue?
I can't remember. I just think it's teams like, I think most teams are looking at maybe those, you know what this typically comes down to? Teams that were looking at Mike Williams in the offseason. Like teams that are like, yeah, we were interested in Mike Williams. Okay, cool. He was around now. We liked him then. Plus the Steelers, they got to figure out what the hell to do with George Pickens anyway. Like George Pickens is a very talented wide receiver. One of only 20 wide receivers over the last 5 years to have actually like 15 to have 800 or more yards in their rookie season. But man, he is a problem. He's always like putting stuff on his eye black about how he's open. I assume you saw the same supercut I saw 2 weeks ago, Gold, of the lackadaisical nature of the routes he was running. It looked like he was going for a stroll. He didn't even look like he was trying. So I think some of it's probably that when you look at the teams across the board. With the Chiefs, and we can talk more about wide receiver in just a minute because there's always something to talk about until they actually make the move, including something I think they could do with Xavier Worthy. I think we're getting dangerously close to not being able to ignore a stat anymore. I think there's a lot of things we can do. We can be like, it's Mahomes, it's Reed, they're two-time Super Bowl champions. So it is hard, fairly so, to be critical of the decisions the Chiefs are making or the decisions Patrick Mahomes is making on the field. I'm about 3 weeks away, and I'm not ignoring average depth of target anymore. He's dead last. Whatever the hell their offensive plan is, or the conservative nature of their offenses right now, they are throwing the ball shorter than any team in the NFL as it relates to the sticks. And to be honest, with Patrick Mahomes, that is unacceptable. And they weren't throwing it that far before Rashee Rice got injured. Certainly that has not improved because of the injuries. But at some point, it's malpractice to not let Mahomes throw the ball quicker, or you have somehow, because of the conservative nature they have had to play over the last 2 years, gotten it in his head that he shouldn't go down the field anymore. And there's some part of it that at some point it holds you up. It can stop you from getting to the ultimate goal. It's not going to make them a bad team or a miserable offense. But, Cole, they got to push the ball down the field more. And that's not a stat you can ignore forever.
Yeah, you know, is this basically offensive line lack of trust problem over the last couple of years? Is this a wide receiver problem, or is this that Patrick Mahomes basically like the governor was placed on him for a couple years because of that? Not by the team. I'm just talking about in his own ability because of the wide receiver room, and that it's just a hard habit to get. I mean, that it's one of those, right? Like, it's not like you just suddenly obviously can't throw the ball down the field. It's either that he has gotten so accustomed to the short yardage options, and that's what he's used to, or is it still that they don't have a wide receiver right now with all the injuries that is capable of stretching the field and getting open consistently?
I don't, but they do have down the field guys. Justin Watson, Mecole Hardman, and Xavier Worthy are all guys that can be somewhere in that 10 to 15 to 20 yard range. This feels like a spillover from last year's offense where they felt they had no need to do it. Now, maybe this is an offensive line thing. Maybe this is a Mahomes comfort thing. But either Andy Reid is calling the most conservative version of the offense imaginable when he has a Corvette in the driveway. So he's like, he's decided to drive like me. Andy Reid has decided to drive the speed limit, and he's got a damn Lamborghini waiting to do something on the road. Or it's been beaten into Patrick Mahomes to be conservative because he doesn't trust the offensive line and he doesn't trust the wide receivers or both. Or some combination, but there are deep passes to be had for any offense.
I feel like
no offense should be this conservative with Patrick Mahomes. None. I don't care the circumstances.
Isn't it because they've just been winning? I think that this goes back to the conversation. Yeah. I think I brought it up where if they would have lost in the Super Bowl, and it would have been because of the wide receiver room or whatever, the conversation would be, you have the Lamborghini, get Mahomes, that guy. And I think to some degree, they did that. They got Hollywood Brown, they brought him in.
And they had Rashee Rice, yeah.
I wonder if they, because they've been winning the way that they won last year and the way that they've been able to win this year and how the offense has looked, I wonder if there's not necessarily a lack of aggressiveness, but it's, why should we change anything when we know that this is a way that we can win and I trust Patrick Mahomes to make the right decisions. We don't need to throw the ball down the field. Where if they don't win, because like if they actually are struggling, and some of it might be because they're throwing the ball behind the line of scrimmage, maybe all of a sudden we have to make that decision because we need to try to open up the offense. Where now they don't technically have to.
Yeah, I mean,
they've been winning.
Yeah, so this goes back to the Steelers comparison, and people like freak out when we mention it
because it's not fun.
Because it's like, oh, we think the Steelers' offense is boring, and again, they got Justin Fields, we have Mahomes. Like that's true, but they're winning in similar fashion. They just are. The Chiefs and Steelers are winning in very similar ways. And ultimately, we know the goal, of course, is to win football games and win championships. And that's what this franchise has done, even with the average depth of target thing that we're talking about here. It's just more because we all remember the highlights from 2019 and 2022. And we know how fun that is. This isn't as exciting on offense. This team is leaning in on having an elite defense in back-to-back seasons, and the style play offensively, some of it is limitations with talent at the wide receiver position. Some of it is, I think, in a little bit of an intentional style of play to complement said defense. I think it's a little bit of both, and people don't like to hear that because they're just like, well, give me the guy that threw for 5,050. Give me that guy again. I don't know if we're going to see that again, guys.
That was fun, and I like that, and I'd like to see that again. The question is, if it's an intentional style. Yeah, the red zone's a whole nother issue.
Mahomes brought that up. I don't care if he's throwing four-yard passes. If they're moving the ball down the field and they get first and goal at the five, if they score touchdowns, then who cares? The problem is in the red zone, they stall out. They settle for field goals.
The question I guess I would have is how often or I guess what percentage do you think that this is Andy Reid? And what percentage do you think this is Patrick Mahomes? Because the text line pointed out, Alex Smith got accused of being a dinker and dunker the entire time he was here. Now, I do think that that was by his nature to a point, but they did call a conservative offense. Despite the fact, to your point a little bit, we know that the Chiefs are like 15th in scoring per game right now. They are 10th in total red zone trips per game. So they get to the red zone, the 10, you know, like in the top 10, barely, but inside the top 10 per game. The teams above them are Green Bay, Buffalo, Atlanta, Tampa Bay, Baltimore, the Rams, Washington, San Francisco, and Detroit. So the teams you would think probably have a better offense than them are the only teams right now that get to the red zone more than Kansas City. So this average depth of target isn't stopping them from getting there. But then when they get in the red zone, that's where everyone's guarding. So like you better have a curveball. If 20-20, you can throw the ball negative 1 yards behind the line of scrimmage to get 4 yards of positive gain, and you can get yourself to the 20, but it doesn't lead to points in the end. Well, then you got to throw them a slider, curveball, somewhere in the middle of this, where you do attempt somewhere between the 20s to show them a different gear, show them a different level, show them a different way you operate the offense. That's why I'm saying we're a few weeks away from just being able to ignore it. Obviously, I understand the same thing you do. Does this stop them from being a Super Bowl caliber team? It hasn't. Has it stopped them from winning a lot? No. Has it stopped? No. None of those things are true. I can't make the argument on that side. Andy Reid could throw that in my face 1,000 times out of 1,000. But they have straight up been a bad red zone team for 2 straight years while being able to move the ball on this dink and dunk version of the offense. They're scoring more points before on less trips by being aggressive. And part of this is you got Mahomes. There's a guy to be aggressive with and to figure it out. Him. Let him do it. Like, you know, I just don't want them holding Mahomes back. I think it's more Andy. I think it's more anti-conservativeness than it is Patrick Mahomes.
And that's what I mean by saying, like, the, you know, the whole cliche complimentary football thing. But I think when you have a defense at this level, it's very easy for Andy to say, all right, we don't have to put up 30. We don't. I know fans are like, well, what's wrong with scoring 30? It's not that Andy is flat out going into a game saying, I don't want us to score 30. That's not what I mean. I'm saying
he knows 26 will win.
Yeah, like, hey, we can be a little more conservative. Yeah, it's crazy. I have Patrick Mahomes, and I know you'd be like, what the hell are you doing? But I know we can win with this defense right now. Yeah. And we don't have to have him go sling it for 450 and 4 touchdowns. Like that, I think that's part of the equation. And you can say, well, that's foolish. I think there still have been times where when it's needed, though, I think, like in the playoffs, we saw them continue to lean on the defense. But when they needed a big first down of Mahomes to use his legs, he's more willing to do that in the postseason to protect himself than he is in the regular season. So The worry level, it's an interesting conversation because it's true. It is happening. They are not as explosive over the last couple of years. But it add that to the list of like, hey, but you know what? At some point, the results speak for themselves. And you're just saying it because you're worried, hey, will this be what eventually bites them in the end? And to this point, it just hasn't. So it's hard for people to probably be all that concerned.
I feel like, to be fair, that might be what it takes is them losing in the playoffs, looking the way that they do. Like, it might take that for it to really, not necessarily be understood, but for the switch to flip where they're winning the way that they are and Andy's just going to do what they need to do to win because he's gotten used to it. He knows he can rely on Spags and the defense to make the plays where if there's one game where they lose, that's a big one and it costs them the season, maybe it ends up changing things a little bit in their aggressiveness on offense and their aggressiveness to bring somebody in or whatever the case may be.
I think during dynasty runs, go back to the Patriots as well. If you're going to have sustained success, you have to be willing not only to adapt in how you build your roster, but adapt in how you win football games, even if some of the personnel is the same at the key places, which is obviously the case. And so we saw how they won against the Niners in the first Super Bowl. That wasn't leaning on the defense. That was offense.
Oh, yeah.
That was all offense. We've seen now they're in the middle of their dynasty where they're going to be leaning on defense more. Does it mean that we'll never see it again? No. If this defense wasn't any good, guys, and this defense was 25th in the league, I also guarantee you they would be far more aggressive in certain circumstances. Yeah. Maybe that even means acquiring assets. Maybe
or
it means
that
or Mahomes taking deeper shots because he feels like he has to score 34 points to win games. But when you have a top five, maybe top three defense again, this is the formula to win right now.
I see a lot of people putting the heat on Nagy.
I understand the criticism. I still think, you know, it's the style of play of how, as a coaching staff, they are asking them to win right now.
I do think it's hard. It is. I can understand why the fan base, or from your point, Cody, you're watching the defense be great. Why can't we be more aggressive? And instead of winning a game 20-17 or 17-10, we win the game 31-10.
Because it's the NFL. I would love for them to win 45-0 every week too. It's just not.
You and Bob both.
Yeah. I just wonder, I don't think that's reality in the NFL, man. That's all.
Could it be though? Because they have Patrick Mahomes and if they were more aggressive on offense, they give themselves that leeway where you can rely on the defense by, to your point, Cody, and what you've argued before, being more aggressive.
Like, that was my argument last year.
You can be more aggressive because you can rely on the defense. So you
now say it like a cheerleader. Do
the
be aggressive.
Be aggressive.
Yeah, there you go.
Aggressive. Now, but Drew's right. I said that last year, and I still stand by that. Why would having a great defense make you more conservative? You can be more aggressive. You can take greater chances. Oh. Everything is in front of you if the defense can get the stop anyway. It should make you, because you want to know how you like Golden. I know they win, but you want to know how you win that game 45-0, 30-10 is in one game. You put your foot all the way down into the pedal, like the damn supercar you have, and you bury their ass. One time you can do that. If the defense really is this great, and it is, then you can be that level of aggressive. They choose not to be. They'd rather just... Andy doesn't hate it.
That's also just not how the team is built right now.
It bothers me. Like, it's like a scratch I can't itch, so it's different. For Andy, he doesn't care. He doesn't care if he wins 11-10, just as long as it's 1-0 at the end of the game.
Know.
He doesn't care.
But man, this is the...
So that's fine.
This is the conversation we've had for 3 years. Everybody's like, I just want a sweat-free win. Like, that's just...
Oh, I don't care about
that. We know how this team... Every game is a sweat. The Saints game should have been the entire fourth quarter. We should not have even cared what happened, but there was the interception. There was the interception. So suddenly it's like, okay, well, a little closer. Otherwise, they were about to go up three scores, I think it was.
Yeah, they were.
And put 34, 36 points on the board. So they've been close to doing it, but there's always something. There's always a little something, and they win. I still will say these are first world Kansas City problems. The team is 5-0.
Well, that's how we have to talk about it. I know. They're all first world problems.
I understand. But that's like, it's a level of like, champion. You know, if this was a brand new regime and they had not had a track record of winning and figuring it out and that we didn't know the defense could win them a Super Bowl, then I'd be way more concerned. But we've been here, man. Like, we've been here
this
before.
This is also why for the next 3 weeks, I just want him to throw to Xavier Worthy like 10 times a game for the next month. Like up to the trade deadline, I want Xavier Worthy to be your number one wide receiver on purpose. Just give it, and like maybe not number one target. Travis Kelce still exists, and you still got to try to win games. But your number one wide receiver should just be throwing it to Xavier Worthy 8 times a game, 10 times a game for the next 3 weeks. Then you can make a decision.
Not with the guy that weighs 165 pounds. I don't want him.
He's never been hurt. I don't want to throw the weight around for a guy who's never been hurt.
I would say he's in the NFL running across the middle of the field, a little bit different than Texas going up against Baylor. In week three of college football.
Well, and you don't want to compare him to Devontae Smith, but the exact same conversation is there. And Devontae Smith runs all over the place. So I think what Xavier Worthy could be peak is probably Devontae Smith, and they utilize him in a way that I don't know if Cody means to use him like Devontae Smith, but you know,
I'm trying to use him more.
Feed him.
Yeah.
So they want to use him, I'm kind of open on that end. But just simply use him more. Devonta Smith played all 17 games 2 years in a row, played 16 of 17. In 25, he sat, I think, because the game didn't matter. And he has played in 4 of 5 games. He did miss one game this year so far for Philly. So, I mean, it just depends. I like a lot of times with players who are, and he is skinny. I'm not denying that he's not a big body. If they've been healthy their entire lives, I'll give them a chance. I'll give them a chance to stay healthy. They've been a healthy player, and that's how it's been for Xavier. I'd take that chance.
Yeah,
it's hard in a year where they've already lost two
weapons.
Yeah,
and it's October 17th. You know you're playing in 19, 20 games a year if you're the Chiefs.
Yeah.
And
they got 15 more.
Asking Xavier Worthy in his rookie year to start getting 10 targets a game for 15 straight weeks or whatever. That's
I just said for the next three. Then you can make a decision. Maybe for 15, but not to start.
All right, up next, we will get to what's trending, get you caught up on what's going on, and we'll ask some of these same questions to Danian Hughes. He played the position in the league. Let's ask him about the target share, and is that a concern? Should it increase? Danian Hughes, former Chiefs wide receiver, part of the Chiefs radio network, joins us next.